Hello and welcome back to another episode of Open Floor. I'm Andrew Sharp, and on the other line, Ben Golliver. What's up, man?
Not too much, Andrew. To be honest, this is the first Open Floor that I've dreaded in probably at least a year. I feel very much like the kid in high school who just didn't show up to the class for like 3 or 4 weeks straight, now has to take the final exam and just not only does it know the answers to the questions, but doesn't even know what the questions are going to be. And this, of course, is regarding our fantasy basketball podcast. I've never played fantasy basketball. I kind of look down on people who play fantasy basketball. You sent me the categories of what they track in fantasy basketball, and I was about to snarkily reply, like, how quaint, no advanced stats. Then I realized, like, that would be the ultimate jerk response and probably hurt you right before we were about to tape, so I didn't do that. I just wanted to be clear up front. You're carrying the entire load on this podcast. I will chip in, but you better be ready to do a lot of work on this one.
Can I be honest with you? I heard it in your voice before we hit record. Because normally when I talk to Ben, he's very fired up. Like, I'll be like, are you ready? He's like, I'm born ready. Like, let's do this. And today it was more of a like, I guess, yeah, let's get into it. And so I feel your pain. But look, man, this is going to be a great day. I am pumped to do this. It's Tuesday afternoon. I have a lot of real work that I should be doing. And instead, we're going to spend the next hour talking about fantasy basketball. And it's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to hopefully, all you need to do is have a good attitude and an open mind. And and you're going to be helpful. I've got some questions that you're going to help me work through.
Oh, geez. Well, I've got some questions for you, too. But before all that, let's talk real news, not fantasy news. Russell Westbrook, big deal, huh?
Yes. We should talk about Russ. I'm pretty shocked that that deal went down when it did. Somewhere around August, I turned the corner and just assumed that he was not going to sign the extension. And honestly, I'm a little bummed that he signed it, and not because I wanted him to definitely leave Oklahoma City, but I was looking forward to a year of rampant Westbrook speculation and throwing him in the mix with like the Lakers hype would have been fun. And there were like just a year of Lakers photoshops is what I'm looking for. I don't know what the hell is actually going to happen with the Lakers, but the Lakers rumors never fail to delight me. And we're missing out on that now, at least with Russ. But I will say that him doing it on Kevin Durant's birthday was amazing and got me really excited for the NBA to be back.
Yeah, it's a patented sharp move lately to just say guys aren't going to take their extensions for no real reason, then hope everybody forgets that you said that, like, once the deals actually go down. I mean, for the record, I was pretty consistent all summer long that he was going to take the deal, and I'm not surprised at all that he took it. And on top of that, as soon as I started seeing the photos come out of Thunder training camp with the ice pack on his knee, I was like, this deal is definitely getting done. I mean, there's no way this guy, if they're starting the season and he's got any little minor tweaks with his body, is going to leave $200+ million on the table. So from that standpoint, I thought it made all the sense in the world. And I mean, look how uncomfortable Russell was at Fashion Week when we were there at Barney's with the new collection, and it was weird. They kind of wanted us to be models. They weren't totally sure, you know, if we should be, you know, wearing the clothes or maybe just, you know, writing about it. But when we were there, Russell was like not even really that comfortable surrounded, you know, by fashion reporters talking fashion. He likes the attention, but not that much. He sort of likes having his image, but not really people all up in his business constantly. At least that's my impression. I could not see any scenario where he was going to plunge himself into, you know, 10 months of that. And that sounds like a nightmare to him.
Well, wait a second.
He's a new father.
You're throwing out a bunch of different reasons here. Because on the one hand, you're saying he's taking the security. On the other hand, you're saying he doesn't like the media spectacle surrounding him, which I don't think that's true. I think he just plays it close to the vest with actual reporters, but I don't think he minds the horde of people that follow his every move. Otherwise, he wouldn't show up and treat like NBA pregame like a fashion show every night, which isn't a bad thing, but it's just like Russ feeds into it. Like the Durant birthday thing was not an accident either. I do think you're right that he ultimately decided this is too much money to turn down. And there's a part of him that probably gets satisfaction in being the guy who stayed. Like, I'm not saying that he did this solely out of spite, but I think it probably played like it played into like 30% of his reasoning.
Well, I'm not going to go that far. I would say the money played a huge part in his reasoning. Well, I would say having stability when you've got a new family is a huge reason. Not being part of this crazy distraction is definitely going to be a reasoning. And I think health is a real factor. I mean, when you can run out like $40 million per year figures deep into your 30s, I mean, he's not going to be like 39 at the end of this deal, but he's going to be well over 30 by the time this deal completes. You have to take that money, especially with the cap kind of, you know, some years it's going up, some years it's going a little bit shorter than expectations. I mean, it's not guaranteed to have these crazy, like, exponential increases going forward into the future. If you can lock that money in, you do it. It's the same argument I made for John Wall, and I'm definitely going to say Russell Westbrook's at the top of it. I mean, he has had health issues in the past. He plays a crazy style. We all know he can't play like this forever. Can he play the same style and still be productive for three or four more years? I would say yes. You know, is he still going to be a pretty good player at the end of this contract? I would say yes. Is he still going to be an all-star at the end of this contract? I think that's absolutely debatable. And, you know, for all those reasons, I mean, it kind of seemed like a no-brainer. And I think you do need to atone
here a little bit.
He was never not going to take this money. I mean, why were you trying to make that a thing?
What are you talking about? I don't need to atone for anything. And this wasn't totally a no-brainer. I mean, they may not keep Paul George next summer, in which case it's Russell Westbrook with Carmelo Anthony making $27 million a year or whatever the exact number is. And it's going to be hard for them to improve. And I think anyone looking at the state of the Thunder at the beginning of the summer certainly were thinking, all right, like, how do they flip this roster? I mean, when you go back to them with Oladipo and Enes Kanter, it was definitely not a sure thing then. And then even after they got Paul George, I mean, Paul George is a rental. Melo is old. And like, I get why he stayed, but it wasn't a no-brainer.
It was a no-brainer.
No.
If this guy cared, look. Your argument is he's going to be stuck and not able to really compete for a title. If he cared about that, he would have shown up in the Hamptons and kissed Kevin Durant's feet like everybody else did. He didn't. He's trying to have a certain level of balance in his life, and he didn't do that.
First of all, KD was out the door by the time those Hampton meetings happened. And I think Russ knew that, and that was part of it as well. And he didn't feel like he had to go beg for Durant to stay, which that's fine. I mean, you can criticize him for that, and that's reasonable, but that's not a fair – you can't question his commitment to winning based on his behavior that weekend. And my main point here is that I was texting you about this extension, and you said he won't make a single NBA Finals throughout that extension. And you may have even said Conference Finals. And that's why it wasn't a no-brainer, because you're right. He does have a dwindling window in terms of his prime. I mean, nobody is more reliant on athleticism than him. And true, he's been like a freak of nature so far. And I think most guys would have lost a step or two because of the injuries that he's had, but Russ hasn't. But that said, like, there's only three or four more years of peak Russ, and I would have understood had he wanted to sort of pursue that with a little bit more help.
So I didn't realize we were just going to be leaking private text messages on the podcast, violating every journalistic standard in the world.
If you're going to call me out, like, I have to apologize. I mean, come on.
No, I just think you should admit that you were trying to make something out of nothing here with Westbrook. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, well, the flip side of this, the Thunder, I mean, I look at it now. I know I was sort of down on Presti relative to some of the other NBA reporters. And I think that was probably because of the like echo chamber where I saw 25 people say Presti wins the summer. And bottom line, I was wrong on that. That was a bad take. Presti has done an amazing job, and to be able to pull this off is a huge win. And, you know, I'm really excited to watch this OKC team this year. And that alone, like, makes – when you go back 6 months and think about how depressing their future looked, now I think they're probably going to be the second or third best team in the West.
Yeah, you reflexively go, you know, counter to any Presti praise. It's really strange. You got to work that out of your system. He's a good GM. I mean, he's not perfect. He's a really good GM, one of the league's best, has been for years and years. I'm not as excited to watch the Thunder as a lot of people are. I think all my questions about that Westbrook and George pairing that, you know, kind of existed, you know, in the past, I've gone over them in terms of, you know, their ability to lead efficient offenses and to share, just are, you know, even exacerbated by Anthony's presence. I think it's going to be a real delicate balancing act. I mean, certainly they're much upgraded from last year. I thought they were, you know, a gimmick last year. I didn't think they were, you know, really even worth watching or taking seriously. They're not going to be a gimmick this year, but I don't, there's a big difference between being a gimmick and being a legit contender. And in terms of, you know, will they make a conference finals, you know, during the course of Westbrook's extension? I mean, it's not exactly a huge slam on them to predict that they won't. I mean, the West is always loaded. At least they're in the mix, but you've got some teams who are going to be really, really good here for the foreseeable future. And I don't really see them as a top two team. It's not impossible. I mean, they could do it. But I think one of the big takeaways about this contract is it's one more way where small market teams are kind of boxed in by the NBA's collective bargaining agreement. These guys didn't have any opportunity to negotiate with Westbrook, right? Like they couldn't have tried to push for a team option on the last year. They couldn't have said, hey, give us a little discount, you know, once you're getting to age 32 or 33 or any of the other kinds of tactics that a lot of teams might be able to sell on their players. Like some of the discounts that Golden State was able to kind of work out this year or going forward that they're talking about working out maybe with guys like Klay Thompson. That was just not an option in this Westbrook one. I mean, they had to assume all of the risk of his you know, age and health-related decline, and that's tough. I mean, I feel for them because there is backfire potential. Nobody wants to say that about this deal because everybody loves Russell Westbrook and everybody wants the Thunder to succeed given what they've gone through. But this could get really ugly for them, not just because Paul George leaves and he doesn't have enough help. It could get ugly because of what happens to Westbrook as he ages. And that will be a tough contract to trade. I mean, I guess you could always try to trade it to the Knicks. They'll take anything. But, you know, this could get real dire for them. But at least they bought themselves some time, some real stability, and a chance to compete at close to the highest level. For all of those reasons, it's definitely a contract worth doing, no question about it. But it's still a tough spot to be in.
Yeah, one or two more knee surgeries, and Russ is ready for New York. I would echo that point and say that we've been over this in the past, but the Supermax deals would make a lot more sense if the additional money beyond the standard max was uncapped. Because now, like you mentioned, I mean, if Paul George leaves, even if they sign Paul George next year, the roster is going to be so expensive with Russ's Supermax deal on the books. They are going to be paying like $150 million in luxury tax for a conference finalist at best. And I'm not going to cry for Clay Bennett, especially after how he cheaped out over the years. But still, it just puts some of these teams in a really tough spot. And that's one where, like, I don't know. I think we're going to continue to see that be problematic for some of these teams. The last thing I will say is your point about OKC's delicate balance with Russ, Paul George, and Carmelo. Like, that's completely valid, but I also just think that they have so much talent right now that in 80% of their games, certainly in the regular season, that it won't really matter because they're just that much better. And now, especially, you slide Patrick Patterson down to a 25-30 minute a game backup, and he's super useful as well. Andre Roberson's great as a defensive guy. Steven Adams is great. Like, this is a really solid mix, and I think it's only going to get tricky at the end of games against like the three or four best teams in the league. At which point, that'll be fun too, because who knows who's going to end up taking the last shot. And you know, Russ's track record is not super great, but it'll be fun to watch.
No, I mean, I can see you angling for the free annual pass to the Banjo Museum. Like, you're really hyping these guys. I just work
I'm
through
excited.
It with me, though.
I'm, no,
I
know, I'm genuinely but, excited.
But work through it with me. We know Carmelo is going to take his shots because he will just – if he doesn't, he's out. I mean, he kind of showed that in New York. Like, he needs his shots and his touches. He holds the ball. You've got Westbrook. I mean, he's going to give up a little bit. He's not going to sacrifice his role. You know what I mean? So I think what I'm a little worried about is Paul George stuck in the middle, you know, getting it kind of from both sides where Melo is eating second, even though he should eat third. Westbrook's eating first like crazy. And Paul George is kind of stuck saying, hey, guys, like, what's going on here? And
okay. Another way to look at that.
No,
though?
But look, he's good at playing off the ball, but he's overqualified as a third scoring option. There's no question about it. And he's in a contract year. He's trying to get paid. He wants max money. He wants max everything. So
that's a valid concern, but I would say that the Paul George that we saw in Indiana the last 2 years was playing like he was Kobe, and that wasn't healthy either. Like, Paul George on the ball, Paul George taking 25 shots a game is not hit the best version of that of the player he can be. So I would say having him sort of pick his spots and focus on being more of a two-way guy is a good thing for him and a good thing for the Thunder. And I think the real difference here is that Melo is a bucket getter that I have believed in for the last 10 years, and you secretly think Melo sucks. And that's why you're down on the Thunder, and I'm counting on him to make this work. So I think they're in good shape.
Yeah, it's probably because you haven't watched Melo play in the last 4 years, because I just read your column from Friday about tanking, and you just admit you don't watch bad teams play at all. So, I mean, that explains a lot. Like, if you think Melo is still 29 or 27 or whatever, then okay, this is going to work great, but he's not.
Look, I saw Melo put up a really lifeless 24-6 against the Wizards in March of last year. So, I think a new situation is going to be good for him, and I particularly if he's able to sort of pick his spots and be a more of a role player. And I believe that he can make that transition. You don't, and you are probably right on that, but either way, it's not going to matter until they play like the Spurs and the Warriors in the playoffs.
I mean, the best possible solution is that all three of those guys just take like 90% of the shots over the course of a game, and everybody else is just designated rebounders and passers. Like, and that could be how it winds up playing. I mean, could they make that trio balance work if like everybody else on the team is just under strict orders to never shoot? And again, that could get into gimmick territory where it's like so obvious what they're trying to do, but they do have a lot of guys who are just not scoring options that are in their major lineups, where you could sort of have a weirder distribution of shots among your players than most teams do, and try to keep everybody happy. We'll see. I don't know. I just think there's going to be a little bit of angling between these stars here with various interests. You know, I mean, these guys are being thrown together.
It's going to be fun to watch every night. It's going to be fun. And you know what? We're cutting it short there because it's time to talk fantasy. I've given you 15 minutes on real news, and now we have some questions to move through for fantasy basketball season.
First of all, though, before we do that, I think we need to establish your credentials here. Have you ever won your league, or how much money have you won or lost lifetime fantasy wise? Are you qualified to host this podcast? That's my first question.
I am qualified, and I won my league last year, although I have a little bit of an unfair advantage because I'm watching games every night. So, like, most of the people in my league have real jobs and real lives and are, like, they're not awake when, like, TJ Warren goes off for 26 against the Kings at, like, 1 a.m. So I can pick guys up off the waiver wire and kind of steal some reinforcements. But I did win my league. So I had a lot of pressure coming in because, again, if you're, like, the NBA writer, you sort of have a lot of expectations to live up to. But thanks to Gary Harris and the stretch run performance of Marquise Chris and Yusuf Nurkic, I was able to bring it home last year.
So the first piece of advice is basically find the suckers in your life and go against them.
Yes, exactly.
Oh,
but,
okay. We're off to a great start here.
So first question was from Ramon, who said, down with Grandpa Golliver. The people want fantasy talk, and damn it, that's what the people are going to get. So that's what we're going to do. I need your help, though. I've put together like 10 different pairs of players that I'm trying to choose between, and I need you to use your robot brain and help me figure out who is going to have better numbers this year.
Well, so when you say numbers, though, you're talking about these archaic, quaint measures of performance. Field goals, yes. Made, rebounds, raw blocks and steals. So we're not using any of the modern metrics whatsoever, right? Like, we're just pretending that the last 30 years of advancements in statistical calculation never happened. Is that how we're doing it?
Exactly. Exactly. We're using caveman stats, aka the only stats I truly pay attention to.
And I am a grandpa. Okay, I got it. Great.
So for the top player overall, Russell Westbrook or Giannis Antetokounmpo?
I think I would go Westbrook still. Now, how much does health matter with this? Like, is it raw over the course of the entire season, or how does that work?
Health is really important, and health is one of the reasons that I'm leaning toward Giannis right now. I mean, you go back, I went back and looked up Russ's last season with KD, which is sort of closer to what we'll probably get this year. He shot 45% from the field. He averaged 23 points a game, 10 assists, 8 rebounds, and 2 steals, which is really solid. You're getting a lot of categories there. But I don't know, man. Giannis just does everything. And I get the feeling that like this could be a year where Russ misses like 10 or 15 games, just because it feels like he's sort of due for another one of those nagging injuries. Whereas this feels like a year where Giannis leads the league in minutes. And like last year, he averaged 23 a game, almost 9 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 blocks, and 1.5 steals, and shot 52% from the floor. So he may have the best numbers in the league.
Yeah. Which year were you going back to with Westbrook? The year where KD was injured, or the last KD season?
The last KD season.
Yeah, I would go back actually 1 year before that, because Westbrook is at like 28, 9 assists, 7 rebounds. That was the year where KD missed some time with the foot.
Yeah.
And Westbrook was actually, I think, the scoring champion that year. I feel like that's going to be closer to where Westbrook is. And I actually think his assist number will be slightly higher this year, just because, you know, he actually has real teammates.
Yeah, and he's going to try to average 11 or 12 assists as like a point of pride.
I mean, I'm super high on Giannis. I don't know if he's going to be able to make that next leap as a scorer in terms of being like, you know, close to a 30 a game guy. I don't really see that. I get what you're saying about the consistency, the youth factor for sure. He's going to be out there every night. He stuffs everything. He gets steals and blocks in ways that nobody else does. I just think, you know, it wouldn't be crazy if Westbrook was at like 28, 11 assists and 8 rebounds to me. I mean, I think that seems reasonable. Like, not being that far off from where he was last year, even with the new talent. I mean, I think huge numbers are still possible for him. And I think he wants that. You know, I think he's driven by that stuff.
Yeah. The other contenders for number one overall would be James Harden, Karl Towns, Anthony Davis, Kevin Durant. Of those four, who do you think jumps out?
I mean, Harden would, just because we know that formula is so patented and you know they're going to play fast. I think the Chris thing definitely adds a layer of uncertainty in terms of exactly how they're going to balance things, but they seem very committed to splitting those guys' minutes up as much as possible. Harden, you know, up and down. Points and assists,
yeah.
Guaranteed. I don't know. I think that'd probably be the safest pick. Who else did you mention?
Karl Towns, Anthony Davis, and Kevin Durant. Three guys who, on their own, would be number one. But yeah, I wonder how their co-stars are gonna affect their numbers. I mean, like, Carl Towns down the stretch last year, I won my league because of Towns, because he was averaging like 28, 13 a game, or 13 rebounds a game. He was shooting like 59% for the final 3 months. Like, we had all checked out on the Wolves because they were too fucking depressing to watch every night.
No,
but,
you had. Not we all.
Well, I think most of America, and don't tell me that you were up late watching the Wolves every night, but it was hard to, like, I feel like Cat didn't get enough love for how absurd he was down the stretch.
I agree, and I think I said that like 2 weeks ago. Pretty sure you just stole my take, but I would take Anthony Davis, I think, would be my next pick in that. He always eats, you know, he's prime years.
Yeah.
KD, I would maybe discount a little bit just because of the blowout factor, everything else we've seen from Golden State. I think they're going to be in insane cruise control mode this year. I think they're just going to rack up wins more easily than they did in really any other time of this era. And they have a lot of new wings who want to score, you know, and I don't think KD's, you know, necessarily chasing numbers out there. So to me, I think I would probably go Harden than Davis from that group.
Okay, yeah. KD actually is sneaky helpful in fantasy, even though you're getting like a muted version of his scoring, because he rebounds, he's like crazy efficient, so he's shooting a high percentage every night, and then you get like two or three blocks every game, at least he did last year. Like, he was really great until he went down.
It's crazy because you think of him usually as a role player, right? But it's amazing how many different things he can do on the court.
Yeah, you said it, man. You said it. All right, let's go nerdier here. Danilo Gallinari versus Wilson Chandler.
Yeah, that's a rough one because both these guys are just always injured.
I know.
The thing in Denver, I feel like Chandler is going to play really important minutes for them because their roster is so lopsided. You know, it's like so many power forwards, and you were complaining about that at the draft, and I kind of blew it off. But yeah, no, you were right. That was they got a real logjam there. It's pretty screwed up. And so from that standpoint, like, if Chandler does get injured, you know, Denver's season is going to look pretty weird.
They're screwed. It's really like I wrote about them a couple weeks ago, and I really like Wilson Chandler. But I got deeper into that piece and realized just how dependent they are on Wilson Chandler. And I didn't have the heart to point out how much time he's missed over the last like 4 years. But yeah, like this whole plan, I mean, I guess Juancho Hernan Gomez can play the threesome, so they won't be totally screwed. But I mean, they're counting on Wilson Chandler to replace a lot of Gallinari's scoring, which is like a huge part of what made them dynamic. The flip side is, from a fantasy standpoint, like Wilson Chandler, there's you have to worry about health, whereas Gallinari like is almost guaranteed to miss 15 or 20 games, and that's why I probably lean Wilson Chandler in this one.
Yeah, Gallinari, he hasn't played like a real quality number of games, like, you know, 75 plus since 2010. That's a long time ago. But I don't think I would take either one of them. I don't trust either one. I don't know how fantasy works, but, you know, injury prone guys, I would, you know, the greatest ability is availability. So for my fantasy team, I would never be messing with any of these guys. I don't know how many players I pick and all that, but I'd be hard selling on both.
That's a good point. Availability is the best ability. That's also why, by the way, I would always be terrified to take Anthony Davis, even though he stayed mostly healthy last year. It's just like, I don't know if my heart could take it if like I was actually invested in his game, because like once every four games he leaves the court, it like hobbles off in like the second quarter. And you spend like 30 minutes being like, what the hell just happened? Like, is he done? And I couldn't live with that on a nightly basis.
Yeah, as somebody who's like clipped a lot of his injuries over the years, you know, and tweeted them out, it's very
yeah,
tedious.
Exactly.
He really does do the walk off an awful lot, but he's also reached the stage of his career, I feel like, where he's just sick of minor injuries, and so he just goes out there and plays regardless. I kind of think he's turned the corner on that. I mean, when he was younger, it did seem like he went out pretty quick on, you know, little blows here and there. Now he's just sort of in Terminator mode where it's like, all right, I'm sick of losing. I'm going to go out there and, you know, regardless, even if I'm banged
up. I wonder how much of it is the Pelicans medical staff too. They probably deserve some blame. But moving on, Harrison Barnes versus Gary Harris.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I view the
this
top
really is
like
torture for you.
No, this is awful because you're asking me to like put aside how basketball is actually played to just count up random counting stats, you know? So
yes.
I to be honest, I don't care. Go ahead, break it down, and I will respond with whatever you want me to respond with, but I
all
do
right.
not
well,
care.
Well, first of all, Gary Harris put up 25 in the preseason last night against the Lakers. And also like down the stretch, I think it was the final 2 months, Gary Harris averaged 17 points a game on 53% shooting and 41% from three, which is pretty absurd. And I think he's got another level to hit this year, whereas Harrison Barnes, you're getting like a steady 18 a game and not much more, probably not as many threes as you'll get from Gary Harris. And I don't know, Harrison Barnes is just like, he's the better player, but I think he will be more frustrating. Whereas I'd rather have Gary Harris cause I'll feel cool and smart for stealing somebody in the draft. Whereas like Harrison Barnes, I had him on my team, 2 years ago, and that was in the middle of the Warriors 73 win season. And like, I was like, look, like they put up 120, 130 points a night. Like there's no way he's not going to put up numbers. And it was just so consistently underwhelming from him that I ended up just cutting him outright at the end of the year because I was so sick of his shit. And Dallas Barnes is not that much different. So Gary Harris is my choice there. And let's see, couple more.
Oh, no, I'd probably go with Harris, too, just because, you know, you look at that point guard position for Denver. You know, those guys, they're either not ready or they're never going to get there. You know, I see a little Moutier hype building, you know, not sure about that. Murray, probably still a year away. So I think they're going to have to lean on him, you know, for large amounts of scoring, Harris, that is, this season. I think he's got a real nice two-man game with Jokic. I mean, I think that's pretty well established. Like you said, very efficient shooter. And just solid. I mean, it's too bad that this game, or, you know, fantasy, whatever you want to call it, doesn't take into account defense or any of the things that, like, sounds, you know.
It's too bad fantasy sports doesn't account for those guys who are just solid, you know, those defensive rotations.
And he's better than solid. He's a really nice player. I think he's going to, like you're saying, he is going to make you look smart unless he gets injured. Yeah. I mean, he did have some injury issues at the beginning of last season, which would be a real killer for them, too. I think the theme here really is that we're a little skeptical of Denver. And by the way, when they were down like 20 to the Lakers in that preseason game the other night, I was like, oh dear, this isn't good. They came back to win it, but all of your Nuggets related concerns kind of came to a head early in that game.
I'm extremely concerned by Denver's, the Moutier hype is not a good sign. You know, we've done this for 3 years now. And like there were murmurs coming out of Denver a couple days ago saying like Moutier's looking great, guys are really excited. And I told you offline, I said, this reminds me, another SI staffer was telling me about his first love in college, and they tried to get back together, and it was an on again, off again situation. And each time he was like, maybe this is it, maybe this is like meant to be. And it was just the breakups got uglier and uglier, and that's Denver and Emmanuel Moutier. Like, it's just healthy for both sides to start fresh, and they're not going to do it, which I'm kind of shocked by. Like, if they're really going to try and start him this year, I think that's a red flag right out of the gate.
Yeah, what I'd say too is when I read those reports I mean, first of all, that was a cool story. But when I read those reports, I read between the lines, and my takeaway was, well, Murray's not ready. You know, it's like if Murray was the one everybody was building the hype around early, that would make a lot of sense. Coming into year two, it's going to be his show. He just took the job, right? But now that we have to like pretend that Moutier is really going to figure it out this season, that means Murray's still not ready, which means the whole position is still a giant question mark, which means you should draft Gary Harris in your fantasy draft.
Yes. Although Harrison Barnes is solid. If anybody wants to just be a little bit frustrated every single week. All right. Three more questions. Three more comparisons here. We'll move quickly and then we can jump into the mailbag questions. Otto Porter or Marcus Morris, who has better numbers this year?
Oof. I'd go with Otto. I mean, part of it is just guys who are in the exact same role. I'm more likely mm-hmm. to kind of default towards them. Also, I think, you know, Boston could go a whole lot of different directions with their lineups. And they were kind of, you know, showing off some like super duper small ball looks during the preseason, which got me pretty excited, and I'm guessing are going to get them pretty excited. And so from that standpoint, who do I trust to have to log huge minutes night in, night out? I think Otto's going to be okay health-wise. He's had pretty good durability. He's going to get the exact same types of shots, pretty efficient three-point shooter. Maybe he doesn't shoot it as well as he did last year because it's not a contract year. Guys tend to come down after their contract years. I just pencil him in and feel good about it.
I like it. I think Otto is going to be drafted like two or three rounds too high in a lot of drafts, whereas Marcus Morris is kind of a sleeper. Didn't make the SI NBA top 100 for some reason. I don't know. I think Morris is going to be counted on to do a lot for the Celtics. That's the only reason I would pause. Like Otto will probably shoot 42% or 43% from three and average like 16 a game, five rebounds, couple steals. Like he'll be really solid, but Morris, they need him to play like 35 minutes a game and rebound more than he has the last 5 years.
Nah.
You don't think so?
No, I think like in a traditional team context, I'd agree with you, but I think the Celtics are going to be super goofy this year with their lineups. Like I think they're just going to try to scramble teams. And it's weird because when you look at their depth chart, you look at their bench, and you're just like, wow, like they went to every continent to pull a different guy, you know, like and they're all guys you've never heard of. But I think
Aaron Baines is going to be a huge, huge hit in Boston this year.
Yeah. Well, Tommy was impressed by his shower presence. I don't know if you heard that on the broadcast the other night.
I did. Utterly Aaron ridiculous. Baines and Yabusele is another one. The Celtics are going to be a legitimately fun team to watch. I mean, who knows how successful they're going to be, but it's going to be a mess. And look, Marquise Morris could be in jail to start the season. So keep that in mind with your fantasy draft also.
All right, next one.
Kyrie Irving versus Steph Curry.
Oh, boy. That's interesting. I go Steph on principle. I couldn't have Kyrie on my team. I think it would just pop a blood vessel. It'd be for my own health. I don't think I could, like,
you're not cheer. Woke enough?
You know, it'd just be too hard. You know, every time he went off for 40 or 45, I would feel guilty, you know, and be like, this guy is just not doing it the right way off the court. I can't be a party to this.
He's not doing it the right way off the court. I am a huge fan of Very Much Woke Kyrie. Did you see his hat last night?
No, what was his hat?
His hat, I think it said popularity contests are not truth contests.
Oh, my God. See, that's what I'm saying. Fantastic. Just give me Steph. Look, I thought the wedding photos that Steph had were utterly embarrassing. I would never watch his wife's cooking show. There's a lot I didn't feel real comfortable about in terms of how famous Riley got, you know, during that one playoff run. I didn't love that. I'm still taking nice guy Steph over Very Much Woke Kyrie on principle. I think here's the other thing, the real argument though for Steph, he underperformed last year. He had a great year. He was arguably the most important offensive player, as you know, people like you and some Warriors fans are always insistent upon. Like, he didn't have the best shooting year. He could definitely shoot better than he did last year, and that will spike his scoring number for sure. And no pressure. You know, they got the revenge. They know they're the best team. They're totally outclassing virtually everyone on a night-to-night basis. They don't have to worry about integrating KD anymore. That problem's been solved. You know, I think from all those standpoints, that points to a nice season for Steph.
Yeah, I think the one advantage that he has over Kyrie is he's probably going to shoot like 50%, 45% from three, and he's going to hit four or five threes every game, which is huge for fantasy. But Kyrie is just going to go nuts this year. And look, I love Coffee Shop. That guy is my favorite athlete at this point.
No,
every single
don't do
press
this.
Conference is gold. I'm not kidding. I'm all the way 180 degrees on me and Kyrie over the last month.
Hey, one question, right, though, about health, what? Though, for Kyrie. I mean, wouldn't that hold you back a little bit?
Ooh,
I mean, Steph,
yeah.
Although Steph got knocked with the ankles, he has had five straight years of near-perfect health, and the way
knock
they manage
wood.
Guys, yeah, knock on wood for sure. I'm knocking on my giant forehead.
Because it's really crazy. If you go back a couple of years, it's pretty wild that we're worried about Kyrie's health and not Steph's in this conversation. But you're right. I mean, Kyrie probably won't make it, particularly if he's playing hard. I don't see him making it a full 6 months without like a 2 or 3 week window where he misses time.
Yeah, it's another sneaky reason for Boston to go to like super small lineups to just like keep everyone out of the paint for Kyrie so he doesn't absorb hits. I mean, that's not going to be your driving strategic factor, but like it's a nice benefit if you play like five out where you just don't have a center at all and he's attacking an empty paint. That should mean less wear and tear over the course of a season.
Okay,
I'm taking Steph over Kyrie. Did you want Kyrie on principle because you want to be a flat earther? Is that what I heard?
Yeah, I also think Kyrie's another one where I will feel smart if I like take him in the top five and he actually plays as well as I think he will numbers wise. I think like 30 a game is probably realistic for him.
So where do people take Kyrie usually? I have no idea how this warped world works.
Well, we'll see. I don't really know. I mean, Kyrie in Boston is a whole different animal than Kyrie in Cleveland, but he's in that mix. I mean, there's like a glut of point guards after the big men are the most valuable in fantasy. So you got like Anthony Davis, Karl Towns.
God,
and then
what a stupid sport. Big men are the most valuable in this thing. That's idiotic, dude. Yeah. Why do you play this? This really warps who you value. It really does. I mean, this is really, really bad for your brain.
Yes, my enthusiasm for various players around the league is directly tied to my fantasy team. So I'll tell you who's on there, and you can track it all year. But let's move on to the questions, because we had a bunch of people write in. Carlos says, I have Dennis Smith on 7 different fantasy teams, but not as my starting point guard. Should I take the risk and trade my other point guards to start Smith? I just have a gut feeling that he's going to be better than all those rookies. First of all, 7 fantasy teams is possibly overkill. I limit myself to 1, but Dennis Smith, I don't know. I think every rookie is going to be disappointing this year, numbers-wise. So definitely don't trade everyone else on your team but Dennis Smith. But the one guy I will say is going to be like sneaky fun is John Collins in Atlanta.
I just think that we have a strategic flaw here. It's like if you fill out 7 brackets for the NCAA tournament and you pick the same team to win every single year, that's a really bad way to do it. You should pick different teams. Spread the love around a little bit. If you're going to have 7 teams, don't have Dennis Smith Jr., random rookie, on all 7.
In fairness, though, it gets confusing. I mean, first of all, if you've got 7 teams, you could conceivably have like the entire league on one of your fantasy teams. And that's the reason I limit myself to one league, is because like I don't want to be rooting for 25 different guys on a given night. So maybe Carlos is just trying to keep it consistent. I just don't think Dennis Smith, Lonzo Ball, De'Aaron Fox, they're all going to be such bad shooters in year one that I would worry about having them on my team.
The best reason
John
to
Collins,
do it, he's, The best reason to do what he's doing is so that when you go to the game, you try to get Dennis Smith Jr. to autograph something and you're in a crowd of people, you can say, hey, Dennis, I have you on seven of my fantasy teams. And he'll actually stop and autograph whatever you brought because he'll be like, wow, you are my biggest fan. Even my mom only has me on four of her teams. You know what I mean?
Yeah. All right. Next question. Isaac says, how do I convince my friends that fantasy basketball is better than fantasy football? First of all, fantasy football kind of sucks these days because half your team is injured by the end of the first month. And yeah, that's why I'm out on fantasy.
And
because of that,
just boycott. Boycott the NFL. I mean, come on, guys. It's 2017. This is like year three or four of my boycott. I haven't regretted it once. I couldn't tell you who was in the Super Bowl these last few years. You can get a beautiful hike in on Super Bowl Sunday. Nobody will be at the park because they're all sitting around watching the game. Just boycott football. That's what you should tell your friends. I'm sure it'll go over very well.
The other side of that, though, is it's really, first of all, you don't have to boycott football. The NFL is still fun at times. You don't have to go full Golliver. And I love college football. But fantasy basketball is a really tough sell to most well-adjusted humans. Like, most of my friends do not give a shit who Nikola Jokic is and never really will. So you don't force it with your friends. You got to find other like-minded people who are
totally
going to be just as nerdy as you.
I totally disagree with that. Get rid of any of your friends who don't care about Jokic. Just cut them out of your life. You don't need those people at all. Hey, this actually brings me to a question I wanted to ask you, though. Serious question. Why don't you play daily fantasy, DFS? Why don't you do that for basketball? It seems like that's sort of the new wave for basketball, or at least it was 3 years ago, and I've just heard about it.
No, daily fantasy, man, that I'm sure I would be really into it, and that's part of what scares me is, like, once you cross that bridge, like, there's no going back, and I,
That's the crack cocaine here. I mean, that's the...
Already feel guilty enough about how much I care about regular fantasy basketball. Daily fantasy, once you involve money, like, I can't live that life. So I'm out for now, but that's a good question.
That is actually really interesting. Now I want to ask you another question. How much do you talk about your fantasy team, like, to your wife or, like, other people in your life? Like, not people who are in the group who you're beating where you're like, ha-ha, great game, good job, like, I passed you or whatever. Like, how often do you bring it up, like, in normal conversation? Like, if your wife comes home, are you like, hey, guess what? I got 43 fantasy points tonight, or no?
Literally never with people I see in my daily life. But my wife does know about it, and because I'll be checking on my phone at like 12:30 at night, just fucking refreshing box scores, and she's like, "What are you doing?" And then I tell her about like TJ Warren going off against the Kings, and she gets pretty worried about her choices, which is completely fair.
That actually sounded healthier than I was worried for on your behalf. So that seems manageable. It doesn't seem like it's a relationship-ending crutch or anything.
Yeah,
I
mean, and
you're in a good spot.
The main thing is to understand that no person in your normal life wants to hear about your fantasy team. And I'm sure we've alienated like 75% of the podcast audience today, but it's fine. Kevin says, where do you prefer to pick in a draft? My preference is more towards the end due to two high-quality players instead of the one stud I could get at the top. I prefer to be smack in the middle, which is a boring answer, but mainly the pressure at the top of the draft is a little bit too much for me to handle sometimes, because like the difference between Karl Towns, Russell Westbrook, Anthony Davis, it's like razor thin right now, and I don't want to make that choice and then have to live with it. So I'd rather be like sixth or seventh and just grab whoever is left over.
I'm definitely with the emailer. I'd want to be back towards the end just because you spread out the injury risk. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You're not completely tied into one guy. If your main guy goes down, you're probably screwed, right? I'm guessing that's how this works.
Look, you realize this podcast is a gateway towards you actually joining a fantasy league.
There's no way. Never. Under any circumstances.
Awesome.
No, there's no way.
I can find a spot for you. The draft is next Sunday. Khan says, which advanced all-in-one stat is the best indicator for fantasy success? And honestly, the number one indicator is not an advanced stat. It is minutes, because if a guy is playing 30 minutes a game, even on a bad team, he is going to put up numbers. There are a couple outliers here. Courtney Lee is someone who played like 30 minutes a game for the Knicks last year and was somehow invisible like the entire time he was on the court. But in general, like, if you're looking for steals, grab the guy who's playing 30, 35 minutes on a bad team.
My answer would be total win shares, not win shares per 48, because that takes into account total. It takes into account total minutes played and total production. I mean, there's going to be some aspects of a season that win shares will be counting that you're not going to get credit for in your fantasy league based on how rudimentary the stats are in the league that you sent me. But if you look back at like last year's win share leaders, it's like Harden, Gobert, Butler, Kawhi, Westbrook, LeBron, Towns, Curry. I'm guessing those guys all were monsters in fantasy, right? Pretty much everyone I named.
Yeah. Yeah,
they absolutely. They all played huge minutes. I mean, basically like 2,700 or up for everybody except Kawhi. So that would be the one I would look at personally if I was doing this.
Look at you with a serious answer. I love it. Thank you.
You just gave really bad advice. You said to look at minutes played, so somebody's going to take Courtney Lee in the second round. I mean, I gotta help out here a little bit.
Really, though, what I'm talking about is like during the season when you're looking for a free agent, just find the guy who's playing like 5 minutes more than he should, because he's going to put up bigger numbers.
I got you. Yeah, the one thing is win shares will be biased towards guys on good teams, so that could screw up a little bit. I should have mentioned that as one downside to win shares.
Yeah. So Jennifer asks, will Russell Westbrook be less productive with the addition of Melo? And then Barack asks, do you think CP3 will experience the D'Antoni bump, or do you think Harden will siphon too many of his touches? And I included these just to say that, like, I'm avoiding Russell Westbrook and CP3 and Harden, and I might take Melo just because that's a pick with my heart. But I think it's one of those things where it's going to be like running back by committee in football, and I think everybody's numbers are going to take a hit this year, and they're like all a little bit overvalued. What do you think?
When I look at Chris, I mean, his stats have been so solid for almost a decade. I mean, basically like 8 years, that
yeah.
I would expect, yes, role change, yes, new organization, yes, big-time superstar teammate. I mean, he has played with Griffin in the past. I think he's just going to get very similar numbers in Houston. I don't see a huge spike either way. I think he is who he is. He's one of those guys you could drop him on any court, and he's going to give you that, you know, 19
you think
and
so?
10. Yeah, I do.
I don't know if he's going to have the ball enough to put up another 10 assists. Or I mean, so maybe then Harden's assist.
Well, no, but I think you got to factor in faster pace. They're definitely going to play faster than the Clippers did. And I think he's going to have the ball a lot. I think they're going to, you know, keep Harden off the ball. And there's going to be, like I said, stretches where they're going to try to manage Harden's minutes a lot more carefully, I think, this year than they did last year. I think they were all spooked by what happened in the postseason a little bit. So maybe that doesn't mean he's going to play 30 minutes, but there's going to be significant times of the game where Harden's not on the court. Every minute Harden doesn't play, Paul is going to play, at least every meaningful minute.
Yeah, you're right.
And I think during those times, that offense is going to get Chris a lot of easy assists. That guy's an assist machine. I mean, to question Chris Paul's ability to rack up assists seems ludicrous to me. I mean, this guy's been doing it his whole career.
Yeah, I just wouldn't necessarily. I mean, Chris Paul is probably going to be valued around where like Wall and Kyrie are, and I think he's going to be sort of a step slower than those guys. I'd even take like a Mike Conley before Chris Paul this year.
Mike Conley's great. It's great to hear you be pro Conley. The other thing with Paul though is he misses time. You know, it'd be another reason why I'd stay away. I mean, if there's any reason to not take him, it's because, you know, he can break a finger in his hand doing absolutely nothing and miss a month. I mean, that happens like every other year.
Yeah. A couple more questions here. Actually, a couple more stayaways for me. I would stay away from anyone in the Heat front court, because like Whiteside is considered super valuable in fantasy, but I don't know. I think they kind of unlocked something with him on the bench last year, and that's only going to get more pronounced this year. They've got Bam in there, Bam Adebayo, James Johnson if they go small. And I don't know. The Heat have like 10 good players. They've got Olynyk now. So stay away from those guys because I think the minutes are going to be kind of inconsistent across that roster. And also the Nets, I would really like Allen Crabbe, Jeremy Lin, or D'Angelo Russell, but I think it's going to be like jumbled together. And that's another team where the minutes distribution is just going to be a mess over the first couple months of the season. So chill out on them. And the Sixers, again, like, A, don't trust any rookies. B, Embiid's going to play like 50 games. Like, Robert Covington is going to probably shoot 30% from three again, even though Philly is convinced that he's like a top 50 player in the NBA. So stay away from those guys as well. And that's it. Yeah, I just want to throw that somewhere in the podcast.
Very good. Brooklyn's interesting because, like, losing Lopez, they could be one of these teams that just plays like the wackiest possible style. Like, they could get into crazy gimmick ball, like tons and tons of guards and small lineups and just trying to push the pace like just to insane levels. And I would imagine at some point that would accumulate for somebody in fantasy. You know, points and assists would just sort of, you know, pile up at weird levels. But I'm with you. I couldn't really tell you exactly who it's going to be this year. I mean, I guess if I had to choose one, I'd probably choose Russell. But again, he's one of these guys where I couldn't have him on my team. He's with Kyrie, somebody else's team for sure.
Yeah, great. A couple more. Dave says, how high should I draft Devin Booker? Considering he's ranked the 70th best player in the SI Top 100, I'm a little skeptical. What do you think on Booker, his numbers this year? Will he crack 45% from the field?
Yeah, that's possible. I mean, I think he's going to scale scoring again. I think he's going to get to the free throw line more, and I think that's going to be about it. But we'll see. You know, I think we've kind of debated him into the ground, and people keep saying don't listen to their argument on the Top 100 podcast. I'm pretty sure they're discussing the Booker portion because that was really where it got ugly. So... Maybe we should just gloss over this.
Honest to God, my favorite iTunes review we've ever gotten was somebody saying, great podcast. Like, definitely don't listen to the Top 100 pod if you've never listened to this show before. But other than that, it's great. And so shout out to that person. And we'll read another review on Friday. But
yeah, 5-star reviews on iTunes. All day yes. long. We appreciate them. And openfloormail@gmail.com.
Yeah. I don't know if we deserve great reviews after this podcast, but this is me being stubborn and forcing you. Last question. Cody says, do you think Larry Nance Jr. has some sneaky upside? Lakers will play fast with Lonzo throwing dimes, and Nance has the athleticism to complement the fast tempo. What do you think of Lakers fantasy options? Nance is in the mix. Julius Randle, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. Are you buying anyone?
I think Nance has had a few too many injury issues for my liking. I'd probably stay away there. If I was going to bet on somebody to just pile up meaningless numbers, it'd be Randle. I mean, that seems like his destiny this year. I believe he's going to play a lot with Ball because I think if you're the Lakers, you want to win games, but you also want to see like how well do your young players play together? Does that quote-unquote Lonzo effect translate to the other potential core guys, whether it's Ingram or Randle? And it's a big year for Randle. I mean, I think he spent a lot of time working on his, you know, conditioning his body this summer. If he's not able to put up double-doubles on a nightly basis, even if they're empty double-doubles, then that's a real problem for him career-wise. I think he understands that. So I get what you're saying with the sleeper potential on Nance. I think I really don't know how fantasy works, but I'd be worried by his injury issues and his role. You know, that would also concern me. Night to night, how important is he for their rotation? That would be a question.
You've been hanging in there through this pod, and I appreciate it. My answer for this would be that Larry Nance Jr. is awesome, but a lot of what makes him awesome doesn't translate to stats. And so he... for fantasy is not quite as appealing as he is like in a vacuum. Cause I think he could also he's the type of guy who can guard like four different positions and would help a bunch of teams around the NBA, but a lot of that just doesn't show up in the numbers. Julius Randle, he's one where I'm personally so frustrated with like the ceiling he puts on the Lakers that I wouldn't want him on my team, on my fantasy team. But he's probably going to put up numbers this year because they're going to be playing super fast. Ingram's a guy that I really like. Probably wait and see. And I'm just going to read a couple other sleepers while we're talking upside.
To me, like, Randle is that classic guy who fantasy players think is really good. Yes. Who's not really good. So from that standpoint, I guess I'm reverse engineering my hate for those types of players to say, like, that would be who I would draft if I was in fantasy, because he probably is good in fantasy because he fools a lot of people.
Sleepers here before we sign off. TJ Warren, I really do think he's going to end up averaging like 20 a game for Phoenix. I heard like Zach Lowe and Kevin Arnovitz were like, what does this guy do? I'm not sure if he plays defense. I'm not sure if he shoots threes. Like, all TJ Warren does is score little like 14 footer floaters. And like, he does that all game, cutting on the baseline. He's fucking great.
They just paid him, so you know, you can count on him to cash out this season.
Look,
no, I would honestly be worried. Like, guys on losing teams when they get their payday, that would be something I would stay away from in fantasy, just because like the skill is there, but is the motivation there? I think that would be my question mark. They have nothing to play for. If he is good, you know, he could wind up in a situation where they don't want to play him, like Bledsoe. So. It's nothing against TJ Warren. I'm kind of joking. It's more about institutionally with the Suns, where like, yeah, you could try to cash in on these huge empty stats that don't mean anything with a guy like Booker, but that could come back to bite you because they don't take their job seriously as an organization. You know, they're just out there screwing around. Personally, philosophically, I couldn't have any Suns on my team. That would be another one.
They score like 115 points a game, and Those are the guys you target. Anyone on the Suns, anyone on the Nuggets, all the teams that are just completely allergic to defense are generally great in fantasy.
TJ Warren's also is not just, we don't know if he's a good defensive player. He's a bad defensive player. They're significantly worse defensively with him on the court. And he doesn't shoot three-pointers at all. So those are certainly concerns. If we're talking about his value, not in this fantasy quasi-realm.
TJ Warren is another tentpole argument that I'm going to be right about 4 months from now. So just concede it now, and we'll be good. Avery Bradley is another one who's currently being overlooked nationally, but I think the Pistons are going to be really solid this year, or solid in like a Pistons-y way. And he's going to put up numbers in a contract year. And if he plays 70 games, he's worth a gamble in like the middle of a fantasy draft. Bojan Bogdanović, another one who is going to be on a shitty team and is going to put up all kinds of like probably 16, 18 points a game, a couple threes. He's worth a shot. What about Scal Labissiere?
I don't think he's very good. I mean, I understand there was some hype there at the end of the season, but personally, to me, I don't think he's ready. I think he's still too inconsistent. I am basing a lot of that on his up and down play in Vegas, where, you know, there were stretches where it was like, what's happening here? Like, you were supposed to be really good. I was really excited to see you, and you're not. But I'm pretty out on all the Kings just as a whole. I mean, outside of like Fox's upside, I'm selling everyone on that roster.
All right, well, Scal Labissiere and John Collins are the two young guys that I'm probably too excited about from a fantasy standpoint, from a regular basketball standpoint, but I'll be on that island. And then the last guy, the last sleeper, is a pick for you, your boy, Derek Favors.
That's a good one, because he was way off the map last year, and he should be back. The tricky part there is minutes. Because I don't know how Utah's trying to do the Spurs thing. Like, we're going to zag when everybody else is zigs, and that's fine. But can you really play him a lot with Gobert? Like, does that work? And if not, he's just a backup, right?
Do they really have any other options beyond trying to make that work? Like, they only have six or seven, maybe eight good players. So, like, if Favors is one of them, he's going to be on the court for, like, 30 minutes a game.
I would actually disagree with what you just said, because I think they're fairly deep. They got a lot of guys who are not going to be splashy names, but they're going to play that hard-nosed Jazz type style where they're just going to make your life miserable. And so I think depth is actually one of their strongest suits. But it's going to be ugly basketball. I mean, it's going to be, I think they're really going to struggle to score. And we talked about that to death. But I don't view depth as one of their issues. I do think fit with Favors and Gobert will be very interesting, because I think you could probably start that way and get away with it for a little bit. And you can definitely have Favors on the court as your center at any time Gobert is off. But Gobert's ready to play big minutes. He's ready to be a franchise guy. He has been that guy. He's going to be the priority no matter what. I mean, one option potentially why you would take him is, again, I don't know how fantasy works, but I could see Favors being a trade piece and going to a place where he becomes a starting center mid-season. If that's the case, then now you've got, you know, 35 minutes blow up. If he's healthy, he's putting up double doubles. I mean, he is a guy who gives you a little bit of everything. He gives you defensive stats when he's healthy too. So, yeah, that would be, I don't know if that qualifies in the sleeper discussion here, but I could easily see a midseason trade of Favors.
Yeah, that actually, he is a pretty intriguing trade piece. Spoiler alert, I'm not taking Derek Favors on my fantasy team, but I was just trying to throw you a bone at the end of this podcast, because you hung in there. This is payback for the Top 100 pod, and it was fun for me to go through everyone's questions and think about fantasy hoops before this draft. And
wait, so do we get to find out who your team is now, or at least your team name?
I will announce it on the podcast at a later date. I'm not going to make anybody suffer any more than they already have. But
okay, if you could have one player, who's the one guy you want this year, then let's do that.
One guy I want, probably Gary Harris, because I'm
so random.
We've got Gary Harris has gotten a lot of love on this podcast. So Gary Harris, Avery Bradley, and TJ Ward are the three guys that I like.
Okay, how about like
want
all-star level guys? Giannis, I mean, who's your, I guess you're picking in the middle of the first, right? So like, who's your dream number one pick? If it breaks right, who's your number one draft board?
All I'll say is that I don't want any Wizards, because it's it's like a mind fuck having them on my team. But although maybe Otto's going to probably put up numbers this year. I think he's got like 17, 18 points a game in him.
Can I ask you an honest question? Are you dodging this because you know somebody else in your group is listening and you're worried they're going to take your number one pick? Because that's what's happening. Like, you're worried if you say you want Giannis, they're going to take him a spot before you or something. Is that what happened? Because you're not answering the question.
I'll be 100% honest. Like, all I care about is drafting Kyrie Irving and riding the roller coaster with him this year. Perfect. So that's my choice at the end of the day. Hopefully it can happen. We'll see how the order shakes out.
Cool. Well, this was a fun detour into a land of enchantment. Hopefully we never come back.
Fun, kind of sad detour. We will be back on Friday and continue. We've got a bunch of good questions, and it should be fun. We still have to talk about lottery reform. And there's actual basketball now, which is great. And really, like, preseason basketball is just like methadone and makes me realize how much fun it's going to be when we have actual games every night.
Don't do drugs, kids. Follow me on Instagram, Ben.Golliver. 5-star reviews on iTunes. Andrew, they should email us, openfloormail@gmail.com. I'll talk to you later this week.
All right, man. Take it easy.
Another great edition of Open Floor is in the books. Did you know Locked On has a daily podcast for all 30 NBA teams? If you're a Lakers fan, search Locked On Lakers. A Celtics fan, search Locked On Celtics. Warriors fans, search Locked On Warriors. Yes, all 30 NBA teams have a daily bite-sized podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.